Okay.
So our next mitzvah we want to discuss is mitzvah number 523. And it's the halacha that a beis din cannot rely upon one witness. You have to have two witnesses in order to punish or prosecute. It's based on the pasuk, it's in the book of Devarim, chapter Yud Tes, 19. Verse 15, it says, "Liyukum edecha b'ish," that one witness should not rise up against a person, klavon chokatos, for any sin or iniquity, b'chokhin shirechata, no matter what sin or crime he commits, apishne edem, through the mouth of two witnesses, apishos edem, or through the mouth of three witnesses, yakum davar, two or three or more, but two is as good as three. So that's the mitzvah. So basically can only act, at least to punish, based on two witnesses. And that's the halacha. The halacha is that one witness can come and obligate someone to swear. So for instance, if somebody is claiming money from another, he says, "You owe me $100. He says, "No, I don't." And one witness comes in and says, "No, you do owe $100. So they can't make, the beis din cannot make the defendant pay upon that witness's testimony, but they could obligate the defendant in a shvuah, in an oath. And if he doesn't take it, then he has to pay. So they can't accomplish that, but he can't punish based on testimony of one witness, you have two witnesses. And furthermore, it says, "Al pi shnayim edim," through the mouth of two witnesses. So based on that, the rabbis tell us it can't be through writing. Testimony has to be verbal. It can't be through writing. It can't be through translation. This is the source that the judges on a beis din have to be aware of all the languages which are out there. Because if they weren't, then you have to have a translator. And a translator cannot be part of the beis din process. It has to be direct word of the witnesses, listened to by the judges. So we know that the judges we had in the Sanhedrin, they were familiar with all the languages, so that they could hear testimony even from foreign speakers if they needed to. If one witness is extremely honest, he's well known, a good reputation, he's upstanding, he's a Talmud Chacham, he's a well known tzaddik, he's even the rabbi, or he's a navi, a prophet. Even so, his testimony is not good enough. So it doesn't matter how well-known this person is, how honest he is, you can't trust one, no, doesn't trust him, you can't accept the testimony of one witness to punish in a beis din. There are a few exceptions to that, which we'll talk about later on, but that's the general rule. And the point here is that it's for punishment, meaning for requiring an oath. One witness can't accomplish that, as we mentioned before. But for beis din to give a punishment, whether it be to pay, whether it be to give lashes, whether it be to execute somebody, one witness is enough, you have two witnesses. And witnesses are interrogated, intensely to be sure they're correct. We have to have two witnesses that their two accounts are corroborated and are confirmed to accept testimony in a beis din. The Sefer HaChinuch writes, what's the idea? What's special about two? Why is two our number? So he says that you can't trust a single individual to punish another, even if he has a good reputation, because people are imperfect. Now, even people who have great reputations and are known to be honest and wise and righteous, even they do things that are wrong sometimes. Typically we do rely upon people's reputations and honesty for many things in life. But for beis din to go out to punish a person, which is a major statement, we're punishing you, whether it be monetarily, whether it be physically, we have to be 100% sure what we're doing is correct. And trusting one person is not enough for us. So even though typically, we assume that people are honest and someone who has a good reputation is trusted, to actually give out a punishment based on that person's word, that's not enough for us. Because even an honest person could veer off the path sometimes. In life, we've seen too many times, unfortunately, that people who we trusted end up doing things that are corrupt or they defy our trust. So basically, can't rely on one person. But two people, he says, if there's two people, there's an assumption that two people that are upstanding Jews are not going to lie together, and we rely upon this assumption in order to punish in a beis din. Because the chance of two people lying together is a much further off chance. They're interrogated, so they always have to line up. If they miss a detail, then it's going to be thrown out of beis din. So there's two people to interrogate, and their stories have to match. We can trust that what they're doing is correct. They didn't plan this big elaborate plot to lie. We trust them. We can punish based on their word.
They don't interrogate them separately.
And they do.
Oh, they do?
They do, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Okay. And they can start asking details,
That's...
And if your people are lying, the details usually get lost in the lie. Yeah. So that's the easy way to catch two people who are plotting against the defendant. Yeah.
You addressed only the possibility that the witness might be corrupt, but nothing about the witness might be mistaken.
Okay, we get to that. That's another point. I'm just telling you, the Sefer Chinuch talks about being corrupt. That's what he talks about.
But he doesn't talk about mistaken.
He doesn't say that. I'm going to talk about being mistaken soon. Correct. So that's the Sefer Chinuch's take on this. And definitely there's a big amount of truth to that, because people cannot always be trusted, especially when someone else's fate is in their hands. You're going to execute somebody else. You're going to convict them as being a thief, or as someone who damages other people's property, or being careless or negligent, or even give someone lashes are very, very painful. So you better be really sure. So to trust one person in general, we would trust them, but not for punishing. And I think there's another point to this, and this is going to go more along the lines of what Art was pointing out before, but we'll get to it slowly. There's another element to trusting one witness versus two, which is very important. And I would base this element upon a Mishnah Perkei Avos. On the Mishnah Perkei Avos, it discusses the idea of judges, not witnesses, but I think the concept can be applied to witnesses as well. And the Mishnah Perkei Avos says, "Al tidan yechidi," you should not be an individual judge, meaning that a judge should be sure to have others on the court before he judges. "Shein dan yechidi el echad," because only one who can judge alone is echad, no, is one with the capital O. It means the one and only God. Only God can judge alone. But others cannot judge alone. V'al tomar, and then it says, don't say kablu daiti, accept my opinion. So even when there's several judges on a beis din, the one judge, even if he's the senior and he's the wisest, he shouldn't tell the others, just go along with me, accept what I say. Shein rashayim, because they have the right to their own opinion. V'lata, and you don't have the right to force them. So that's the Mishnah Perkei Avos. So again, the discussion there is about judges, but I think the insight of that Mishnah helps understand witnesses as well. Because I think that the concept really, really fits together, whether it be witnesses or judges. So let's explain this Mishnah a little bit, and then we'll understand better the idea. So typically, a beis din we know has multiple judges. And we discussed this, I think, a few months back in this class. You can have a 3-man beis din, a 23-man beis din, or then the Sanhedrin. The high court is 71 people on the Sanhedrin. Those are your typical Jewish courts. So it's rare to find a Jewish court with one judge. You know, the typical American court, I believe, is one judge until you move up in the ranks. But a Jewish court will be 3, 23, or 71. But there actually are times where one expert judge could judge alone. Halachically, we call him a dayan mumches, we said. No, if there's an expert judge, there are certain cases that an expert judge could judge by himself, halachically, and be okay to do. Now, this is not recommended unless both litigants accept it, but it'd be allowed. Now, the judge could say, I'm here, no, I'm qualified, we'll talk about qualifications, that's a different discussion, but I'm qualified as an expert, and therefore I don't need to have two others with me, I could do it by myself. However, in that case, the Mishnah says it's not ideal. Even though you're allowed to, and it's permitted halachically, and it's totally fine in terms of the basic law of a Jewish court, however, it's not recommended to do. And that's the idea that it says, Al tidan yechidi, don't be a singular individual judge, even in a case where you're allowed to, because the only person who can judge on his own is God. You know, that's the only person who can judge on his own. So what's the idea? Only Hashem can judge alone, but not others. And in this context, the Mishnah refers to Hashem as Echad, as the one. No, the one with the capital O. So it says the only one who can judge by himself is the one and only God. But everyone else, even if you're allowed to, technically, according to Lacha, you should bring other judges into the beis din. So what's the reason for this? So I think there's many ways to explain this, but I think this point is the major point. Let's say something occurs in front of me. So I have a personal take on what's happening. You know, from my perspective, I see it, you know, from the way that I view the situation. Now, let's say I'm an honest, you know, unbiased person. You know, we're not talking about someone corrupt right now. Anyone can lie. But let's say I'm an honest, unbiased person. So the event will be filtered, you know, through my mind, my perspective, my life experience, and understood based on who I am and based on my own eyes. So I'm trying my best to be totally honest, and I have no biases, and you know, I'm trying to keep to the law 100%. But bottom line is that I am who I am, and I see things differently. You know, you go to, let's say, jury duty. So they call you up on jury duty, and they say, can you be on the jury of this case? So I know, for instance, someone told me that, you know, they were called in, and they're supposed to be on the jury for a case of a drunk driver. And she said, well, my daughter was once hit by a drunk driver, so I can't look at this in an unbiased way, because my perspective in life is that I have it out against drunk drivers. So I can't look at this case honestly. And everyone has their own perspective. So she was taken off the net. She wasn't accepted to that jury, obviously. But we understand that no one's trying to be dishonest. This person wasn't going to say, I'm going to lie as a juror and vote against, because that's just, I can't see it from a balanced, unbiased perspective based on my life experience. And that's a less subtle way, but there's many subtle ways in life. You know, we all have our own perspectives and we all have our own lives, and you know, we see things in the way we see them. Finished. It might be that we're making a mistake about the facts, or it might just be that our perspective sees the facts differently. What seems to me 100% right is all my own perspective. That's all it is. This is the big drawback of having a singular judge. A singular judge might be an expert, and he might be wise and righteous and unbiased and honest and trusted by all and have great reputation, but he's still a human being. And his experience is still one-sided. So his perspective on life and on the situation is only one-sided. He's not trying to lie, he's not trying to be dishonest, he's not trying to be biased, he's trying to do it very honestly, but he's a human being and he has a different perspective. There's a famous quote from the Gemara. It says, "Kashem she'im parts of fam domos," just as all people have different faces, so too they all have different minds. Kach in deoseim domos. So every person is different. There's no people in this world who are like you. Even identical twins still are different. You know, in some way, they're still different. And that means that everyone's going to see the world differently. We all have different deos. We all have different perspectives. We all have different minds. We know that there's an idea that the Torah comes down to us in many, many different layers. There's a concept of Shivim Panim LaTorah. The Torah has 70 faces. There's a concept that every single Jew can have their own portion of the Torah. They can say Chidushim, new ideas in the Torah which weren't said before. And the idea is because we all look at things differently. So my perspective has a certain truth to it. And I can see something in Torah no one before me ever saw. Even though people before me are much greater than me. But they weren't me. So I can look at the Torah and I can say, ooh, I see a very inspirational idea here in this pasuk, in this word. And you can look back at all the sources, no one ever said it before. Doesn't mean you're wrong. Doesn't mean you're wrong. It means that you've been the one, from your perspective, who was lucky enough to draw out that piece of information from the Torah. And that's something which, so it says that the Gemara actually says Moshe Rabbeinu is privy to all these things. But after Moshe Rabbeinu, a lot of the people can have a chiddush. You can have a new perspective on Torah based on your own perspective, because you're looking at it honestly with your own mind, based on your understanding. And very often that's the truth of Torah that you're trying to find, because you're seeing it from your unique perspective, because everyone's different and Hashem made our minds different. It says that we had a couple weeks ago Parshas Yisro at Har Sinai, when Hashem gave the Torah. So there's midrashim that point out that everyone heard the Torah based on their own personal level. I mean, you're standing there at Har Sinai and everyone's hearing Hashem speak, but we're all different. We have different perspectives, different minds. So we heard the interpretation of the Torah based on our own perspective. They all came together as one, and they're all part of the Torah's truth. But everyone, based on who they are and where they were in life, they heard the Torah a little bit, you know, some other nuance differently because of who they were. So one person, as much as they try to be honest, they can't see the full picture. They just can't. It's impossible. They can't take it all into account, and they can't have every perspective on the story. They don't have a full view of the story. It's just, or the context of the story. You don't know the background of the person in front of you. You don't know the full context of what happened. You don't know what was going on that day. There's a lot of things you don't know. So you're watching, let's say you're the judge, you're hearing the story, you're only hearing a partial story, because you're not privy to all the facts as much as you try. When it says that only Hashem can be an individual judge, so Hashem can take everything into account. Hashem is Echad, Hashem is the One, meaning He is all-encompassing. And Hashem can see it from all sides and all perspectives. You know, we as human beings, even physically, I can only see one part of the chair. I can't see the other side right now. I can only see them from my angle that I'm at. I can't see further. There's a famous story, I forgot the exact details, you probably know better than I do, about the elephant in the dark room. Remember that story? Now you walk into a dark room with a bunch of people. So one person says, what's in front of you? So one says, I feel a rope. And one says, I feel a stick. And one says, I feel a carpet. And then one says, I feel a hose. And you turn it on, and it's the light on, and there's an elephant in the room. One's grabbing the tail, one's grabbing the trunk, one's grabbing the tusk, one's grabbing the fur. But everyone, from their perspective, 100%, I'm holding right now a rope. This is just for a rope. This is for sure a stick. This is for sure a hose. I mean, whatever the examples were given. But the bottom line is that you don't see the full picture. When you see the full picture, you see, no, it's an elephant. And these are all parts of the elephant. You're only getting one part of it. So, you heard that before? That's a well-known story. I'm sure it could be said better. I forgot all the details of it, but it's a cute story. But Hashem can see the full picture. Hashem is Echad. He can see the entire picture, get the perspective from all sides, you know, the context, the background, everything which is there. And the truth is that there's no end to this. Human beings will never get a full picture. So even two witnesses doesn't really do the trick, or even the 71 judges doesn't do the trick. Because even if it's 71 judges, there could be 100 different, 1,000 different angles to the story. But the bottom line is the Torah has to give us limits. And Torah says, okay, so 71 judges will be our maximum. Three judges can judge certain cases, and two witnesses are enough for us to say we got enough of the perspective to rule in this case. But Ein Dan Yechid Yel Echad, when it says the only one that can judge individually is Hashem, Hashem is called Echad in this context. He's called one because he has the license to judge on his own because he can see the entire picture and no one else can. I mean, he encompasses all, he sees all, takes all into account. An expert judge, so he's an expert, he knows all the laws, and he's respected and honest, but he still is limited in what he can see. So he's allowed to judge on his own, but it's not recommended. And then the Mishnah continues and says, well, and he can't tell others except my opinion. So we might ask, well, why not? He's the expert. He knows better than the rest of us. We're all just these junior judges, and there he is, a seasoned expert judge, and he says, this is for sure the ruling in this case. But the answer is, well, everyone has a unique perspective. And even if you don't know as much, you're not respected as much, you're not as experienced, but you might see something in this case that he's not going to see because you are who you are. Another analogy given. Now, people ask, how can we have modern Torah scholars that are able to teach things they were never taught before? So I said one idea is that because it's in perspective. But there's also the idea that, there's an analogy given in early sources that we're like a midget on a giant's shoulders. We have the benefit of, all the giants of history. You put a little midget on top. So he's much smaller on his own, but he's building up on everyone else. So the expert judge says, well, I see it this way. So you might say, that's a great opinion, and that helped me understand something new, which you didn't see because, I'm going on your shoulders. But ultimately, you didn't see that from your perspective, and I was able to see it. So he can't say, accept my opinion. He has to say, I need your opinion too. Even though I'm the expert, I need your opinion. Your opinion is important. Your opinion is valuable. And you're going to have something to share that I wouldn't have shared on my own. So I would take this whole concept and apply it to witnesses as well. Witnesses, if you have one witness, he might be the most honest person you know. He might be a wise, he might be a person, he's an expert, he's a tzaddik and a Talmud Chacham. But still, he only sees one angle. And one witness is just not going to cut it when it comes to punishing someone else because you didn't get the full perspective. And you might say, well, I saw a knife, and I saw a murderer, and I saw a victim, and I saw him stab him, and I saw him fall on the floor dead. The answer is, it's likely it's true, but maybe there's something you're missing. And until we get a second opinion here, maybe there's some other perspective. Maybe you don't know what happened outside the room. Maybe he actually lived afterwards. He walked out too early. Who knows? But there's so many things which could have changed from one person's perspective. So two Adim, two witnesses give different perspectives. They have different contexts, they have different lives, they have different eyes to look at, and they might see the same thing, but they might see it differently. This could explain also, there's a halacha that two relatives cannot testify together. So it's interesting, because on the one hand, I understand why you can't testify against a relative, or for a relative, but let's say my brother's on trial. I don't have a brother. Let's just say my brother's on trial, right? So, of course, I can't testify against my brother or for my brother because I'm biased. One way or the other, I'm biased. Either I hate his guts because, he used to do this to me, or I love him. He's my relative, and I'm going to... So you can't trust me. But the Gemara talks about, let's say Moshe and Aaron walk into the Beis Din together, and they're testifying against some stranger. So what do they have to gain? They're not biased against this stranger. They happen to be brothers. They happen to be together, as brothers, enjoying a nice walk in the park, and in front of them they saw a theft. So why can't they testify about the theft? What's the problem? Why is it the two brothers, are we worried about them being biased? Well, they don't even know the guy. They don't know the victim. They don't know the robber. So why would they be biased? So I think the answer is that the two brothers, they have similar perspectives on life, being that they're brothers. And maybe those viewpoints aren't different enough to have Beis Din accept them to come in. Even though they're not going to be exactly the same, but brothers have life experience together. They grew up in the same family. They have similar perspectives on life. So therefore, maybe you need people who are a little bit more different to be two witnesses in order to testify in a Beis Din. That's my own thought. But the Gemara does discuss the case that Moshe and Aaron can't even testify together. And you wonder, the two most honest people you can imagine are Moshe and Aaron, but they're brothers, they can't testify together. Why not? The answer is maybe they're too close. They're too similar. Their lives are too much intertwined, and therefore they can't see things from different perspectives. So that would be the idea of two witnesses. So one witness, he might be mistaken, even though he's trying to see it from the best of his possible, the most honest perspective he can have. And it could be he's just not seeing the full picture. It could be he's missing a point that someone else's mind will be able to pick out, he wasn't able to pick out. So I think that's another idea of two witnesses. Now, I think this is very practical for us, even if we're not going to go into a Beis Din and testify, even if we're not going to be judges on a Beis Din. But to me, this is a very big key in the concept of dan lekav zchus, giving the benefit of the doubt. We know that there's a mitzvah in the Torah, and it's a major part of our own relationships and midos, not to judge others, and to give everyone the benefit of the doubt. And when we see something happening in front of us, not to jump to conclusions. And often it's hard because, what do you mean? I saw him do this, I saw her do that, and how can I judge her favorably? How can I judge him favorably? What am I supposed to do? And the answer is, well, realize you're only seeing it from perspective. You don't know a lot about the story, and you're only seeing it from your own personal angle. The famous example, the person that's always given in this context would be, I see someone who I know that they're good upstanding Jews, they keep kosher, and I see them sitting down to McDonald's and eating something, right? So immediately you say, I thought that he kept kosher. I trusted them, I went to their house and I ate, and now I'm all nervous, what do they feed me? And maybe that person has some life-threatening illness you weren't aware of, they had to eat on the spot. The person was diabetic and needed to take in some food right away, or else it could have been very, very dangerous. Maybe the person had their own package of food they brought in so they could meet a business client, not McDonald's, but a nicer restaurant, a business client or something. You never know. But you're only seeing part of the story. You're just seeing that one person at that one moment, and you're missing the entire context. Maybe this person has had a struggle their whole life with keeping kosher, and you don't know their background, you don't know where they came from, you don't know how they grew up, you don't know how their education was, and you don't know how hard they fight against this struggle. Who knows? You don't know. So who are you to judge the person? You have to realize your perspective is so limited, whether it be just because of your own mind or because you don't know the context. You don't know the surroundings. So at that point, you've stuck yourself into one perspective, but realize there's so many other ways to look at every single event in life. There's always some other perspective to take upon it. It's also a matter of looking at things with what we call an ayin tova, with a positive perspective. Something goes wrong. You have a difficult day. So all you can think about is complaining and negativity and grumbling, and this is what's... But realize you're not seeing it from the other perspective. There could be something very positive gained from this. Maybe there's something which occurred today, which you're just ignoring that point because you're seeing all the negative. But if a friend was watching, that friend would tell you, it wasn't all that bad because, look at that, look at this, and they'd find something else positive in the event. Was to show you that you're seeing it all from a very negative perspective, but there's other ways to look at it. And that's an idea not just of dan lekav zchus, that's an idea of seeing things b'ayin tova, seeing things very positively. So that's a different perspective on this whole idea. But the idea to understand that people have different perspectives is so important. And it even comes, we argue with people sometimes about, different viewpoints or philosophies, politics, this and that. And we have to, at a certain point, resign ourselves to saying that people see things differently. And yeah, there's definitely room to argue intellectually with people, and people can change, and some things are wrong, some things are right. But sometimes people just have different perspectives. I say that your mind works differently than mine. I see things differently than you see them, and we'll have to learn to deal with that difference. And that's fine, because the Torah tells us everyone has a different day. Everyone has different minds, and minds do think differently, and that doesn't mean that everyone's wrong, besides me. It means that other people could be right, too. Just their perspective is different than mine. So this is really key, I think, in life, to understand so many situations. So Torah sees it in regards to witnesses, but I think we can apply it so many other places in life. There is, I think, another lesson in this is respecting the viewpoints of others. So I'm going to say that, like I said, I disagree with you, but I need to respect you for it, because I've just said you have a different viewpoint than me. And based in, even if I'm the expert, your opinion is valuable. And if one judge, if one judge is a new rookie judge, and I don't trust his opinion, but his opinion counts. And if two vote against me, and I'm the expert, then I lose. That's how Beis Din works. The viewpoint of other people is valuable because everyone is created with a different mind. Hashem made us that way for a reason. Hashem didn't make us all think the same way because Hashem was looking for the world to have all these perspectives coming together as one. Everything joins together to create truth. If there wasn't back and forth of ideas and discussion and counter-discussion and opposition, then truth would not come out. Truth comes out based on when people's different perspectives, debate ideas, argue them out, they come out with the truth. And it's also why you walk into a yeshiva and the boys are sitting there, you know, arguing back and forth. It's funny, Rabbi Lapiansky once said that he was in the Mir Yeshiva many years back, and a reporter came in. I forgot what the context was. A reporter came in to report something about the yeshiva. And he took him around the yeshiva to show him like how yeshiva works. And in the Mir Yeshiva, we're talking about hundreds of people are there, and they're all in the Beis Medrash, you know, fighting things out in terms of the way yeshivas work. And this reporter said to him, you know, he saw all the boys arguing with each other, you know, with fire. And he said, are they going to come to blows? Like, he was waiting for a fight to break out, you know. And he didn't understand. This is the way that we try to bring out an idea of truth. They're not fighting against each other because they hate each other. They're fighting because they're trying to have the opposing opinions come together to figure out what's the truth of the Gemara. That's the truth of the context. But this non-Jewish reporter couldn't understand. If you're fighting so hard, like, the next thing is going to be a punch. That's the next thing that's going to come out. But this idea of respecting other viewpoints, because we're all created in that way, to see things differently. And just to go back to one additional point. And I mentioned how there are exceptions as to when one witness is accepted. So we don't have to get into laws of a Beis Din. But one important point in life, which we don't realize, but we're actually relying upon that almost every single day, is there's a concept called Eid Echa Nema Bisurin, that one witness is a belief when it comes to prohibitions. What that means is that, you know, if you invite me over to your house for dinner, so how do I know the food in your house is kosher? Just because you told me the food is kosher, right? Are there two witnesses who watched you cook dinner tonight? Right? There are two witnesses that have been overseeing your pots for the past 40 years? The two witnesses, no. But one person can tell me, please come to my house, I keep kosher, and I'm allowed to believe them. Now, if the person's not a mitzvah observant Jew, then that's a different story. But someone who is observant of mitzvahs, and they tell you that my house is kosher, I trust them. Halachically, that's called Eidach Nemesurim. I'm allowed to trust one witness when it comes to prohibitions. And there's a lot of places where we apply that concept. And that one's actually interesting because in a Beis Din, you know, we don't accept relatives, we don't accept women as testimony in a Beis Din. But for this concept, we do. I mean, who's the mashgiach on your home kitchens? You know, it's usually the women, you know, and we trust them. That's why a mashgiach in a restaurant, be one person. They don't need two witnesses in a restaurant overseeing the kashrus. We just need one person in a restaurant overseeing the kashrus. Because when it comes to prohibitions such as kashrus, one witness is sufficient. So we actually rely upon that concept all the time. And that's a very broad concept of testimony, but we call that testimony in halacha. And that's something which we, you know, we do trust people. There's a certain trust of one person. If the person is mitzvah observant, then there's a trust. And they tell me, this is kosher, this is treif, you know, this is whatever the context is. But we can trust on these types of things. We're not dealing there with punishments. We're dealing with prohibitions. And if they tell me this is allowed, I could trust them that it's allowed. And then that's a concept of edus, where one witness is believed. So that's an important exception, just because we deal with that exception constantly in our lives, so almost daily. So that's the concept of two witnesses. So next week we'll talk about the safeguards of witnesses, meaning we know the witnesses aren't supposed to lie, but the question always is, well, what's going, let's say a witness lies, you know, what is their punishment? How do you determine a lie? Because let's say two witnesses come in and say X, and two come in and say Y. No, it's their word versus their word. So who's going to win? So that's the next part of the Torah discusses the concept of Edom Zomimin, of how to punish witnesses that are coming in to conspire, and how do you actually prove them being false? And that we'll get to next week.